Sirenauts, and welcome to this week's episode of Observations. I am your host, Sovereign Sire, and I'm brought to you by the good or not so good people at julieland.com. As usual, I am joined by the nefarious, the wonderful, the mysterious Mr. Dick Avery.
And the sober. I haven't done drugs in weeks.
Oh my God.
I know, it's a miracle, huh?
It makes me nervous.
It should.
That's my Tina Belcher noise.
And I just got a text that says, I loathe dumb porn girls.
FYI.
Exactly.
Because you know what? The porn community is about unity.
Yeah, exactly. All about love.
So I forgot to sign my no-compete clause when I joined the agency.
Yeah, exactly.
And today, that voice you're hearing is Tony Sam. I am joined today in the Sov Pod.
Hello.
Tony Sam.
Hi. How are you? This is my real voice. It's not a joke.
I want it to be a joke.
Mm-mm. This is it. This is the cards I've been dealt.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Just tell us.
If this is your Tinder profile,
or think of this as the dating game, and you're bachelor number one.
But that's a dated reference.
When
it's
I did
Tinder.
I think it was so dumb.
Yeah, what was your Tinder profile?
Well, because it was early when it had come out.
Okay.
So now I feel like it's real weird. It's weirder. But I was just trying to be coy, and I'd put nice pictures of myself, not ones with my dick out,
right?
Or like shirtless.
Yeah,
that's weird. One, why would you ever do that?
Well,
it's always a swipe left situation on that. That's,
yeah. So I put nice, handsome. I mean, real handsome photos, and I think what I'd said was something like I'm trouble. That's all I'd put on there was I'm trouble.
Uh huh.
And that was it. And I went on dates and stuff.
Wow.
My Tinder profile said, doe-eyed intellectual giant seeks Marcus Aurelius type.
Wow.
I thought that would weed out anybody that didn't have a sense of humor.
Did you like Tinder?
No. Made me hate humanity.
Well, I can imagine if I was a female, it would probably be a lot worse. Like, just the bottom of the barrel dudes.
Closer to the mic.
Oh.
Yeah,
bottom of the barrel dudes.
Yeah.
Bottom of the barrel dudes.
You can hold it. You can.
I feel like I'll get tired after a while. So
you won't. You, won't. You do this in stand up, right?
Hello.
Yeah, it's like doing stand up.
So,
tell us about a little bit about who you are, where you came from, how long you've been doing stand up. I don't know. Whatever relevant details.
I guess I've been doing stand up for long enough that I should be much more successful. I started doing stand-up in 2003 in Chicago because I started out as an improviser, and I married a stand-up comedian, and she got me into it. That relationship did not work, but stand-up came out of it.
What she did to you?
were you funnier?
Stand-up, Jesus.
I mean, come on, of course. No, she's very funny. We're friends now.
In the divorce, did somebody divide up the jokes? Okay, you get this joke.
Oh no, her comedy is way different. She could have had all my jokes at that point.
Okay,
in my career. You take those. Maybe you can make something happen with them. But we're friends now. We've been friends for a long time. But she was my first wife. I've married twice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A lot of people are always surprised when I tell them that I've been married twice. I don't know if they're surprised that because I'm me and they can't believe that I got married, someone said yes twice, or the fact that I would do that to myself.
Are you still married to the second wife?
No. I've also been divorced twice.
Oh, that's spectacular.
Also, I like to consider myself a collector.
But don't be dismayed. My natural father's been married 5 times, twice to the same woman, so...
Wow.
I was they took a breather. He married someone else, divorced her, and then they were bumped into each other at the grocery store and were like,
I was just talking about that.
We could have hurt each other more critically. We could have made the wounds a little bit deeper.
So they went in for round two.
So next time you won't walk away from this shit. Just make sure the job's done.
So you said they didn't work out the second time
didn't
either?
Didn't work out the second time either.
Oh, man.
But don't you have to give credit for the person even trying again?
I do. I think... You know, if it's always when you look backwards, you only see the good things, I think,
right.
Most of the time. So we always are oh, yeah, everything was really great. I miss her so much. And then when you're in proximity, you're like, oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah. I don't know why the fuck I got out of that. You're nuts.
Yeah, exactly.
You are nuts.
You just reminded me why I left you the first time.
Yeah. I don't know. That I was with crazy. I didn't marry crazy women. We're all irrational.
Are they both still women? Or
yes, they both still identify as females. I did. It's weird though. I did drive them across the country. I feel like both of them moved to New York after they to get as far away from me as possible.
That's good.
That's fine. So yeah. If you want to move to New York, you should marry me.
Yeah, exactly.
And when it's over, you'll get the inspiration.
So how long have you been single now?
I got divorced the second time in 2011.
All right. Do you think you're going to get married again?
No rush.
I don't know. I at this point, you know, I think I'm still kind of rubbed the wrong way with marriage. Both of them lasted so short. Like the first one was only in reality, we separated at like 7.5 months and we got divorced at 9 months, I believe. And the second one lasted 1.5 years, but in and out. That's another thing I can guarantee. Tony Sam guarantee. You don't want to be married a long time. I'm your guy.
Quality over quantity.
I like the Tony Sam guarantee.
That's right. If you need to get in and get out, I'm your man.
And a trip to New York.
Right. And you always will, from my point of view, you'll always get the pots and pans. You'll always take the pots and pans.
Yeah, what do you leave in a divorce? Like what is it like you've got to have?
It's hard to take half of nothing, so we never really split much. But yeah.
When I got divorced, I took the printer.
Oh, the printer!
The printer
was
a fucking deal breaker.
Those are cheap. I was in college,
so I really needed that. I really need that fucking printer.
That's fair. I see that.
That was.
I had a 52-inch TV that I would, over my dead body, was going to let go. I was like, this is the nicest TV I've ever had.
The last boyfriend I had had carried a TV for like through a marriage and a long-term relationship. Like the TV had been a wedding present from the bride's parents.
Mm.
He had managed to carry that through his relationship with the wife, then through his next relationship, which was with me. To continue to retain rights.
Well, TV, it's important.
To the TV.
That's the one thing I say goodbye to every time I leave the house. Goodbye, flat screen. I don't know if I'm going to see it again.
Do you say, when you walk back in, do you say, oh, loves, you know, any...
We made it, buddy! The only thing I ever, I think, and a gift registry is interesting, too, because generally a guy could give a fuck about whatever... You know, the wife wants to put, you know, we got to have plates and we have to have pots and pans and we need this and that. And I'm like, okay, whatever. I don't care. But the second time I got married, I wanted something on that list. So I put this tool set. It was this big tool set. I don't even use tools, but I was like, that is awesome. And I want it. And somebody got it. And that was the one thing that I was like, I'm also keeping that too.
Yeah.
They're my tools. Yeah. It's a tool bag, drill. Never used it.
Yeah, but
never
it looks good.
It once, but I feel complete with it.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's sad.
It's not sad. It's a personal victory.
It's like.
No, we should hang out because I have a living room full of furniture that's still in boxes from like flat pack furniture that I like fans have sent me from the internet. Like when I moved, I put a bunch of stuff on a wish list. So I have like a. In theory, I have a fully furnished apartment, but literally all of it is still
you just
like,
don't
want to
unbox it.
I just, because you know what? I have a futon and I have like a sort of flat screen computer situation and my dog, and I don't really have visitors or like a boyfriend or anything. So, I mean, I'll live like
on what else
my futon,
do you need?
Like eating protein bars and drinking water and petting my dog. I'm good.
Oh, you'll be dead soon. If you keep that up, you'll be dead soon. You don't want to live on protein bars. No way.
Why not?
Because that's all chemicals.
Oh, but I love them. They're
no
so,
way.
But they're so good.
Baked in a laboratory.
Yeah.
Just an old grandma in a lab coat. I made these for you. That's weird, though. You haven't unpacked. I feel like whenever I move, those boxes sit there for a long time.
Yeah. Because I live in my head more than anywhere else. Like, I just sit in my couch, and I'm a writer, so I just I just live in my head. Like, a majority of my life is lived completely in my mind. So I hardly notice my surroundings.
Or is that the saying I like is that the voice inside your head is like an annoying roommate that won't leave.
And doesn't do dishes.
Yeah.
The voice inside your head doesn't even say clean up. He's like, yeah, leave it.
No, well, I used to tell people like that part of the reason that I like having my dog is because she forces me to leave the house at least twice a day because
she has to poop.
She has to use the restroom. Yeah. And also, you know, I'm not cruel, so she needs to like move about. Move about the area and feel that she owns something, you know, feel like this, like she walks out and she goes, "This is mine. I will be guarding this now. I will walk the perimeter, asshole."
Right.
You know?
Well, you're a good owner then. I feel like some people just, it's terrible. They keep the dog and then it's a prisoner.
I can't do that. Like,
my upstairs neighbor, who I want to kill, their dog. Actually, I want their dog to die, which is not nice, but I know that's not nice.
Go on.
I
want the neighbor's dog dead. What are we talking about?
That's whenever dogs come up. They just moved in like a month ago, and they had this annoying Pomeranian that just barks, and I just want to get by a BB gun and shoot through the window.
Yeah, no, my dog doesn't make a lot of noise, and she's pretty much like the same as me. She despises physical activity, so even a walk around the block, and she's like, "I'm good, homie. It's all good. Like, we don't have to continue with this farce."
Do we have topics today?
We do, but I'm kind of liking talking about like marriage and moving. Like,
it's life, man. You can't write this.
I'm kind of enjoying this
like
topical.
I just wanted to know.
This unfolds. I'm a cat person. I can't stand dogs. I'll be honest with you.
What?
Dogs.
Show's over. Thank you very much. Leave.
I like to say that because I always like to see people's reaction to it just tears at their soul.
I do the same thing when I see. Depends on the animal.
I do the same thing when people show me pictures of their dog or they bring their dog and I just go, "Oh, fucking dog's ugly."
Ugh.
And I did it 2 days ago to a friend of mine. She had a picture of her with some dog and I went, on Instagram and I went, "Ugly." And she sent me a text. What the fuck? And I was like,
Whenever someone shows me a picture of their kid, I always like to go, "Jesus." I mean, beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. Whoa.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of ugly baby pictures lately, I'll tell you what.
And I've had
to bite my lip.
I like, for me, it's that weird thing of
tongue.
Of
tongue or lip. I bit
most
both.
Most people's kids, it's that cliche, which is like, your kids are boring. Like, it's not interesting to me. Like, I don't, like, yeah. Kids are like, and it makes me sad because I know, like, one day I'll probably have children and I'll be, like, really fucking excited about them. And then, like, I want to go, like, show my friends and I'll have to know that they don't give a shit about what's going on in my life now. Right.
And they're going to say, "Oh, it's so cute." And you're going to, like, "No, you don't."
I think everyone appreciates a cute kid. Nobody wants an ugly baby. It makes me feel lonely.
When I see someone's pictures of their kids and, like, and I don't care, it makes me feel lonely for my future self.
Oh.
Like, I'm like, not only do I feel like current depression, I feel future depressions.
Well, I take enough pictures of my cats where I think I'm in the same boat as if I had a kid. You know what I mean?
No, like, I do the same thing with my dog.
You see, "Oh, that'd be a great picture." And then you realize, "Oh, I'm taking the 109th picture of my cat in the same position."
Yeah.
Same thing with sunsets. Right? How many pictures of the sun setting do you need? Honestly.
Right.
Instagram, I'm talking to you. We've seen enough sunsets to last a lifetime. People are going to look back now and think all people did was eat at brunch
Now you got me thinking, like, I wonder if, technically speaking, if they could figure out, like, if they can come up with, like, a sunset photo for every day of a year.
Right?
Like,
there was a cloud project
that
my ex was part of, that Josh Darling was part of, which was like clouds.
Was he your ex? Because I like clouds.
Part of it. His head was certainly in the clouds.
Oh.
But we lived in Florida, which has like sort of these epic cloudscapes. I mean, it's like cathedrals.
I lived in Florida.
Yeah, it's like cathedrals and like choirs of angels and like a whole congress of celestial bodies. You know, everything looks like a. Like the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. I was in West Palm Beach and Miami and then a small place called Palm City and Stuart, which are all kind of around.
Stuart's north, I thought.
Yeah.
Sorry. I lived in Fort Lauderdale. I went to school at FAU in Boca Raton.
So you spent a lot of time drinking and partying and sandbar parties. And
it was a good time.
Yeah.
Do you remember
much of it? What did you learn there?
I studied marine biology.
Oh, get the fuck out.
Okay, short podcast.
So you used to be a teenage girl, is what you're telling me.
Yeah. Every female I went to school with wanted to save the whales or dolphins. And all the guys wanted to work with sharks.
I wanted to work with sharks. So like, because they're terrifying. So it's like you want to master what is scary.
I liked sharks, sure. I actually was more, I loved coral. I was fascinated by it. Just that they could create such these huge things that have lasted, you know, hundreds of thousands of years, and they're so tiny.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
I think coral's pretty cool. I think sharks are
okay. They're beautiful. They're so beautiful. You haven't looked at enough, I guess. You're giving me like, the stink eye.
No,
that's pussy shit. Talk sharks, dumbass.
I had
people that can see the potential in things, like chemists and people that go into pharmacy and cure cancer and shit. Yeah,
I went from marine biology to molecular biology, so I was the person who had to visualize. You know, all I looked at was basically water all day. And you had to just, you know, micropipette. I always do this out of
now I feel like
habit, but it was
like
boring.
Now I feel like you're
practice.
Better than me. It's like,
oh, way
shit.
Better. I wasn't going to say it, but I actually, I wished I could have done marine biology more, but I got bit by the comedy bug. I just always wanted to do it my whole life. So when I was sitting on a beach in Florida, it was around 9/11. And I was like,
you thought it was funny, and
I thought I could make a lot of jokes about this.
Exactly.
You were like,
oh. No, I just
started
like,
you're just sitting, I could just see it like, man, there's a lot of things you can make fun of.
I mean, you could mine this for some really good jokes. No, I realized I was like, what am I doing with my life? So I quit working on the Sea Turtle project.
Do people know?
To Chicago to work
wait, do people know? You got to tweet this, like that you're an inspiration for being a comedian. Is 9/11.
Thousands of people
died. As opposed to like, yeah, I was inspired by Richard Pryor or George Carlin. No, it was thousands of people dying.
I mean, peripherally inspired.
But how did you think stand-up? Because I know, like, for me, I think I was always interested in stand-up, but at the same time, like, I went to a performing arts school and stuff like that, but I didn't know anyone that, like, became a stand-up, everyone, and became an actor, or there was never, it wasn't like I was around people that had some sort of trajectory that involved getting up and telling jokes. Obviously, I knew what stand-up comedy was. But it wasn't like I knew anyone that was like actively pursuing
right.
that as like a thing. It was like this mysterious thing where one day you just showed up on TV doing jokes.
Well, I never set out to be a stand-up originally. I was from Chicago and was a huge fan of Second City and Saturday Night Live. And I always wanted to do Second City in Chicago. And my original plan in high school was to do it with my friend, my best friend. We were both huge fans of the show and comedy. And so we were like, let's do this. And then he pussied out. And so I was like, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. If you don't do it, I'm not going to do it. So then I did all the biology thing. And so my plan was to come back and take classes and do improv and sketch. And then through improv, I met my first wife, who was also doing stand-up. And I saw her do it. And I was like, wow, I really want to do this. And then I got bit.
What about it did you like? Like what?
The instant gratification. With improv, I felt like I'd use a lot of the times... You're on the sideline because you're with a group of people and you're just trying to build this thing together and you're waiting for your turn. Well, sometimes I felt like I was waiting for my turn to make the laughs and the jokes and I was just like, fuck this. I want it now.
Right.
So, I mean, stand up is also a lot. I feel like people are less forgiving of stand up because you are there and you're supposed to have this prepared material, it's supposed to be funny, and now I'm going to make you laugh, and when it doesn't happen, it tears
your
soul.
So I
got
to ask the question, can I ask the question of, so who are your inspirations? Who did you look up to growing up?
Well, God, I hate to say it now, but I always was a fan of Bill Cosby.
Oh, you are a garbage human. Let's go retroactively fuck with him.
Like, no, I mean to say that you're a fan of his comedy, I mean, put aside what he is
turned
you know,
out to be
doing and may very well be true of what he's done. I always see now I used to say what he's done, and since I've worked at TMZ, I always say allegedly because they're all about you can't say it unless it's true.
Yeah, exactly.
So
like there's allegedly global warming.
Right. as himself, that album is the one of the best comedy albums I've ever heard. Bill Cosby himself. Right. I think it's
he was awesome. A genius back in the day.
The storytelling is spot on, and you will go anywhere with him. And so a lot of my stuff was just taking you on this kind of weird journey of a story, and I could only hope to be as good a storyteller as he is. But, you know, all like the guys like him and George Carlin, I think his writing is terrific. I don't maybe necessarily care for his lists. He likes to list things a lot.
Yeah.
You put your shit in there.
Yeah, no,
like there's I love certain Carlin. Comedians. It's like there's a female comedian that's very popular right now, and I love her stuff. At the same time, it just feels like, oh, I'm waiting like 10 minutes to get to a punchline.
Oh,
do you know what I mean? It's going, it's this thing where it's like you want to be like, just like
better be good because I'm waiting.
That, just like half that lead up. Oh,
yeah, I guess some people are just storytellers that have a long way to go to get to a punch.
But you know what I mean? It's like sometimes it, like you can't like it's with certain. It's like that listing.
But there's
it's like sometimes it works. And sometimes it works, and then sometimes it's like, oh, this is really like.
When I tell a story, I want to tell it in a way that it's written, that it keeps building, and there's a punch coming every, you know, so many seconds, right. Because you want to have people want to go that journey with you.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it has to be a funny story. Two, it should have funny points that build up to a bigger funny conclusion.
Right.
So I have my album. I was arrested for a DUI. Actually, right after the second divorce.
That's payback for the 9/11 shit.
I know. See? It all comes back. It all balances out in the end. But it was a really great story, and the story is about 15, 17 minutes. It's a long story, but that story is just it's full of the jokes that bring you to the point where you wanted to hear the ending, and the ending's great.
But no, you're right. But that's exactly it. Because I grew up on a lot of these comedians that you're talking about, and I always tell people like, the good ones were the ones that you kept you there, and like you said, that they took you on the journey. And Cosby was a genius at it, and I think Carlin was too. But you would just be like, it wasn't that like 10 minutes of okay, I'm waiting. It was no, you had the. It's almost like the little breaks. We're gonna take you here. Keep going, and then it's that boom, and you want it. You wait for the. You can't wait to hear the ending. Right.
Generally, if you're likable. People will go anywhere with you once you win them over. But, you know, like a lot of albums, you listen to a lot of people's albums, you know, there's a lot of low points on the album where it's just like they'll say something and you get the the chuckle. And then it builds back up again. But, you know, if people like you, they're going to go the distance.
Well, do you think – I was just watching – I'm going to get kind of comedy nerdy. Like, are you familiar with Stuart Lee?
Mm-mm.
Okay. He's an English comic that does – a lot of like sort of storytelling and like long form stuff. But I was just watching this lecture he was giving, not a lecture, but he was giving a speech at a university. And he was talking about sort of the shift in comedy. And he was saying that like when he came in sort of in the 80s and the 90s, there was alt comedy was like becoming a thing. And there was this emphasis on like storytelling and like what he was calling sort of like long form material. And that increasingly there was this emphasis on the comedian as like a writer. That like that there was this understanding that writing was like sort of an inherent thing that would benefit stand up, like you would write material and then deliver it. And that increasingly it seems like comedy is geared towards these very short bits, like so that it can be on YouTube or whatever. It's like there's this emphasis on kind of like paring everything down to like these really kind of like isolated things, and that it makes it more challenging to sort of be successful, like having a bit that's like 17 minutes long or.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I wouldn't put that one on in a video.
Right.
I mean, it's a long one. But I think, well, as far as YouTube and even late night
sets. Like I'm asking is, like, because YouTube has become such, like, a way that comedians are sort of putting themselves out there. And even just, like, with Comedy Central, you see them put up, like, Key and Peele sketches or whatever. And it's, like everything is, like, kind of...
Well, me personally, I don't want to put up everything on YouTube because if all my stuff's out there for free, then why would you want to get it?
Right.
So
no, exactly.
There's maybe one or two jokes, like jokes that are, you know, 3 minutes or 5 minutes, and then just that one joke is up, not, you know, like whole sets. But I don't tell one-liners. I know a lot of comics that do, And, you know, late night sets seem to work a lot better with those kind of comics because people don't have the time to wait to get to a longer punchline on late night sets.
Because at the end of the day, there's all kinds of comedy and all kinds of stand-up comedians. You know what I mean? Like,
there is?
Yeah, I mean, it's like music. I mean, there's something for everybody. I mean, there's like some people want to hear stories. Some people want the one-liners.
Yeah.
Some people want to take my wife or...
Well, I like crazy stuff that went on. I just like the weirder stuff. I like stuff that's more creative and
me too. Like I've always leaned towards.
I grew up on Richard Pryor. He was God to me growing up as a kid, and I just loved. I don't know the vulgarity of it all, but I just loved just the story, like the stories he would tell and his crazy life.
When's the last time you heard a Richard Pryor album? I'm just
kidding. I think maybe about a few months ago, because I have all of them on my...
I tried, and I don't think it holds up to this.
That Nigger's Crazy is really good. That one holds up. That's the only good album, I would say, out of all of his albums, that's the best one.
I think, you know, a lot of stuff, like especially Lenny Bruce, I think Lenny Bruce, he doesn't hold up either, but...
What about Bill Hicks? Do you think Bill Hicks holds up?
Do you ever listen to any Woody Allen stand-up?
The what?
Any Woody Allen stand-up? You ever listen to
I did. I think his stuff was terrific.
Yeah.
Just so smart.
Bill Cosby was an icon.
When I was a kid, my brother...
This is what this is about. You guys are just trying to see if I'll admit that I liked all these creeps.
Exactly.
I love it. And then my family rounds the corner and my mom's crying. This is your life. Like, what the fuck? And the police take me away. What the... Help me!
It's an intervention. Welcome.
Oh, no!
Exactly.
Well, my career's over. It never started, but it's over now.
Bill Cosby did teach you how to pick up on women, though, right?
Oh, yeah! Let me buy you another drink, baby.
It's like Bill Cosby's guide to picking up on women.
Let me
sweeten
it up with this.
Velvet Jones. Was that Eddie Murphy, Velvet Jones?
I don't know.
Back in the day. How to be a hoe.
I've been staring at a fucking... vibrator, I think, whole time. Is that a vibrator?
Yeah, totally.
This is a place where pornography is occasionally manufactured.
Hey, I didn't know what to expect coming here. I didn't know what was going to happen.
Do you need a skateboard?
Oh, yeah. Oh, nice.
Want a skateboard?
What would she describe her expression as? She's like,
She's like, grind it, baby.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
Angel Vane, right? Yep. That's Angel Vane?
That's Angel Vane.
Hell yeah.
So...
What were you expecting happen here?
Yeah,
I thought that segment would be a...
Do you like naked girls?
What?
Do you like naked girls?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're good.
They're cool.
Are you queer, son? Are you queer?
Hey, you like the naked girls?
I like them, sure. Girls are pretty. I like girls.
Well, you kind of remind me of Mark McKinney.
I got one coming over here at 6 o'clock, so...
Oh.
Electra Blue.
Oh, yeah. You need an assistant?
Whenever people have asked me that, I always tell them, like...
Nah, I'm good.
No, I'm always like, how much are you going to pay me?
All right. Yeah. How much are you going to pay me?
My assistants through the years, when I bring them on the sets, when I'm shooting some porn stars or some naked girls, I'm always telling the guys, like, usually I pay them like $300 a day. I'm like, you guys got to pay me $300 a day because I'm getting you fucking free pussy. And they're like, oh, but you got to pay us. I go, I'll pay you half. If you're going to see pussy, I have to take half off. Mm. So.
Which is it's a nuanced gendered approach to employment.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Because men will accept pussy as payment even if they don't get to actually touch it or fuck it.
No, exactly.
Some men will take being in the presence of pussy as payment.
No, those guys are weirdos.
There are a lot of weirdos.
I know.
Personally, God for weirdos.
I know. Personally, like strip clubs had never done it for me. I just, it's this tease boring. That I can't.
Yeah.
I can't.
No, strip clubs really like. I went to my first strip club a few months ago in Toronto. And I went in, it was interesting because I went in and all the girls recognized me from my porn. Which I'm not a huge porn star. I do porn, but so I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, cause they all like flocked to me and whatever. But at the same time I was there with the gentleman and, when they started milking him for cash, I was like, I got really offended cause I like pulled out, I was like, here's my $2,000. Here's my $2,000. This is for all the ladies that fucking don't hustle me. Like, you come over here, I'll hand it to you, but I don't want you to sell me all night. And it was like they couldn't break out of like salesman mode. I'm literally handing it to you. You don't have to do any. Just come grind and do whatever for an hour. Like, it's already yours.
But first of all,
but just don't Don't sell me.
But it's it's Canada. It. First of all, it's Canada. Yeah. And Canada is boring. When it comes to strippers and strip clubs, you need to go to some a real strip club.
This
was
like behind the brass rail. Doesn't matter. It's like the best titty bar in the city.
I went to, with my first wife, her friend lived off near 8 Mile. Oh. A really nice area. Yes. And so there was a place called the Booby Trap.
I love it already.
And we went there. And first of all, I don't know why we thought it was a good idea for like me, her, and her like high school friend to go. But we went, and it was like some girls were pregnant, like very pregnant.
Oh, okay.
And one girl had like on these big old braces.
Keep talking.
And and one girl wore like wire framed like, huge glasses, which really took you out of it. I have to say. Really took you out of the moment. It was like unfortunate ladies' night.
Oh,
but like my problem has always been.
That's a harsh sentence.
I started seeing strippers when I was like 15, and I always tell people, and it was like, you know, when you're young, it's like great. And nowadays, like the last 25, 30 years, I'm so bored. Like I'm just like I go and I'm like, really, really, can we just go now? And like then the girls are begging for money, and you're like, what are you doing? Like, go away.
The first couple of times I went, I had a friend who was like, I really want to go. And I'm like, well, I don't have the money to do this. And so he bankrolled me. And I still was just like, this is all okay, great. I actually laughed when I laughed out loud when a girl, they'd stick her ass in my face and she'd turn around and she'd smack it like sexy and look at me. And I'd be like, just because it didn't do anything for me, and I thought it's just such an awkward, weird situation where there's lots of people here. Yeah. You're doing this in front of me with all these people here, and I can't focus on that, and I can't feel like, ooh, yeah.
Yeah, no, I feel like it's totally like a frustrating experience. It's like you leave because you're just like, even if you find one that is cute that you're into, it's like, because the jig is up. I mean, like...
Oh, I went to one where
it's like you... So you leave and you're just like, oh, like, I can't even trust that she was being nice on purpose.
No.
Like,
well, I went to one in South Florida called Diamond Dolls. I think it was on Dixie Highway. Shout out to Diamond Dolls. I'd actually sold a stereo to one of the dancers, like, the night before. I was working at Sears when I was in college. And I'd sold her like this stereo, and then I saw her and I was like, hey, I sold you a stereo. And she was like, oh, yeah, hi.
It was just
like,
shy.
She'd been taken out of the moment because she's like, someone saw me
like
in the real world.
Back into real world, yeah.
Yeah. And so I just felt bad for her. I was like, here, why don't you just take the rest of this?
Aww.
And it wasn't my money, it was my friend's money, so I didn't care.
All right. Well, on that very dour note,
hey.
will you come back again for another episode?
Yeah.
Say goodbye. All right. I am Sovereign Sire. You can find me at ilovesov.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Sovereign Sire. And we've been talking with Tony Sam. Can you want to tell everybody?
My Twitters?
Your Twitters. Your websites, your album, everything.
My album, Scaredy Cat, it's available anywhere. Fine albums are sold.
Amoeba?
Sure. It's at Amazon, iTunes, others. It's called Scaredy Cat, and my Twitter is at TOEKNEESAM, like Tony. You get it?
Yeah, I got it.
Like Tony?
Mm-mm, nothing like that.
And do you have a website?
TonySam.com, but my Tumblr, I think, is, I like that better now.
Yeah,
think it's
like a calendar.
Tony Sam Comedy is what it is on Tumblr. What?
Okay, so there's like a calendar where they can sort of see when you're going to
play. Yeah! I got a show tonight, in which you probably won't hear about because this won't get up soon enough, but you can check my Tumblr.
All right. And with that, I will bid all of my sire knots adieu.
Adios.